Well, we get it underway by welcoming back to the program from MassLive.com our friend Sean McAdam. Hello there, Sean.
Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Red Sox season ended, I guess, in the most appropriate way yesterday with them finishing up at an even 500.
Yeah, that kind of sums it up, I think. They were a mediocre lot when you get right down to it. There were times when they looked like they might be headed to the postseason when you go back to July, and then there were times where it looked like there was still a long way to go to get them into postseason contention, and ultimately, you know, they go until game, 159 before being eliminated, which was maybe a little better than what some had expected, but in the end, they didn't get there, and that's what you're judged on.
Now, again, they weren't a great team. I'm not sure they deserved to be in the playoffs. At the same time, in the American League, I feel like the wild card race was skewed heavily by the ineptitude of the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, it's probably not a coincidence that you have three teams coming out of the AL Central. Obviously, you would have a team winning that division, and no one doubts the quality of the Cleveland Guardians. They pretty much led wire to wire, but they were, all those teams were helped out by getting 13 games each against a historically bad team in the White Sox. But I guess I feel obliged to point out that in going head to head with the White Sox this year, the Red Sox went only 4-3.
Right.
Split a four-game set in Chicago in June, and then took 2 out of 3 in September when they really needed a sweep. So who knows if more games against the White Sox would have boosted the Red Sox in the end anyway.
So as you look at the team's performance in 2024, whose stock rose for the Red Sox heading into the 2025 season?
I don't think there's any question that the number one answer there is Jarren Durant, who, you know, went from a guy that started to emerge in 24, got hurt, didn't play a great center field, and we really didn't know exactly what to make of him at the start of the year. 160 games later, which is the number he played, you know, you can see a guy emerging as a five-tool player and someone who I think ended up with the third highest WAR figure in the American League, which obviously measured total performance, not just at the plate, but on the bases and in the field. So not only was Durant their best player this year, but he was the guy that took the biggest step forward. After that, I think you'd have to look at Tanner Houck, who got up to about 180 innings and made 30-something starts. And that, too, was a big step forward for him. So I think at the very least, the Red Sox look and feel like, excuse me, they have a number two starter in Tanner Houck and the potential, who knows, to be even better. And then I think smaller steps forward for guys like Abreu and Sidon Rafaela, each of whom had some flaws in their game. Abreu was left-handed pitching, proved to be his undoing at times, but played a terrific right field and emerged as the right fielder of the future. And Rafaela, who struck out too much, but was, you know, had a pretty good year with 70-something RBIs from the bottom of the order and played very well at both short and center field. So and Justin Slayton would be, I guess, a fifth guy on that list. You know, somebody who was taken in the Rule 5 trade, had never pitched in the big leagues before. And, you know, I would say going into next year, if he is not the closer, and that probably is going to be somebody else, I would expect that it's going to be Hendricks if he's healthy. But Slayton could certainly emerge as the go-to guy in the eighth inning.
as well as those outfielders all played, and all three of them, I think, legitimate Gold Glove candidates, are any of them untouchable when it comes to off-season deals?
I would think not, although it would be difficult to trade Durant at this point. I mean, he really is emerging as a star player with terrific speed, power, good defensive ability, just a well-rounded player who's, I think, older than most people recognize. You know, you look at him and say he's pretty young, but he's already 28, so he should just now be coming into his physical prime. It would take an awful lot, I think, for them to give him up. And I would say, to a lesser degree, the same could be applied to both Rafaela and Abreu. I actually think there's, you know, if they're going to go out and trade for a front of the rotation starter, I think that they may end up using Tristan Casas as the guy to get them that piece. Just because I think it's a little easier, even though he provides power, and that's one of the hard things to find in the game, I think they look at him as perhaps being a little bit more of someone they could afford to move than the more athletic players in the outfield.
Well, of course, today the news that Masataka Yoshida may need off-season surgery on his shoulder. That's already a pretty big contract, and if he's going through shoulder surgery, that's likely to be a guy that would be tough to move in the off-season.
Yeah, and, you know, shoulder issue aside, he's owed about, I think, $54 million, somewhere from the mid-50s to near $60 million over the next three. And to facilitate that kind of deal, I would think the Red Sox would have to pay, you know, at least half of that down and turn him into a guy who's, you know, making closer to $9 or $10 million than a guy who's approaching $20 million a year. He's frankly too one-dimensional for that kind of salary. He's not a good outfielder. He doesn't run well. And the hard part is, as a DH, there's not a ton of power there. He's hit, you know, I think 25 homers in two games. And I know there were some limitations and injuries this year, but his trade value is not great. So they may have to, you know, hope that the shoulder gets him straight and that they can count on more production for next year.
What are we to make of this pretty solid play we saw in the last couple of weeks of the season from Vaughn Grissom?
Well, it certainly ended, the season ended better for him than it began. You know, he lost just about all of spring training with some groin and hamstring issues. By the time he made his debut here, it was the first week of April. For a month, he looked underwater, just not major league caliber, really struggled in the field, didn't hit at all. And it was pretty obvious reading between the lines that they were not crazy about his preparation and maybe conditioning, and kind of sent him to AAA, almost told them to start all over again. And to his credit, it seemed like he did that. In September, he really kind of started to turn it around in Worcester, and then had a couple of multi-hit games here in the final 10 days of the season. So that's hope going forward. I don't know that he necessarily has a lock on second base for 25. I think you could have Christian Campbell in that mix. You could have David Hamilton in that mix. But he's at least better positioned than he was 5 or 6 months ago.
The Red Sox pitching staff got off to such a great start, but struggled after the All-Star break. Their ERA went up each month of the season. Overall, how do you think management looks at the work done by Andrew Bailey this year with the staff?
Well, I think that for the most part, they should be happy with what he did with the rotation. I think the Red Sox ended up with the sixth best starter ERA for the year. And this was largely the same rotation that they had a year ago, which was somewhere 16th or 17th in that category. So there was definitely some progress made. I don't think all of those guys are done progressing and being as good as they can be. But Hout certainly took a big step forward. Crawford got through a season physically and pitched deeper into games. The issue there were the home runs he allowed. And Bayo pitched better in the second half than he did in the first. So signs of progress there, and certainly three guys they can build around. You would think that they would add Giolito to that mix for 25. And then, you know, again, what they need there is a number one starter type, someone a front of the rotation guy, a guy who, if the franchise does what it's supposed to next year and gets back into the postseason, that could start game one in a division series or a wild card round. So that's going to take up, I think, most of their offseason or be their number one priority. But I think they feel good about what they have in the rotation in terms of having a foundation of three guys who are only going to get better.
Is a number one guy like that easier to get through a trade than through free agency?
Well, they're out there in free agency. Corbin Burns is one and Max Fried is another. But we know that John Henry did not favor signing 30-year-old free agent pitchers, even when he was in the mood to spend money. If they are ready to spend money again, as I suspect they will be this winter, I don't know that that philosophical objection goes away. So I'd say it's far more likely they trade for that guy than they do sign one.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Well, the highlight of yesterday wasn't the game so much as what was happening on the broadcast booth, the final game for the legendary Joe Castiglione, going out in style with so many former players coming back to express their love and affection for a guy who's been a part of this team for most of our lives.
Yeah, 42 years is really a remarkable run, and it does speak to the kind of person that Joe is, that everybody from Roger Clemens to Pedro Martinez and, you know, another 15 or 20 players after that made the trek up for the day to be there for him. That speaks to the relationship and friendships he's built over the years, how he's thought of, and just the kind of guy he is. I think I've seen a picture of you and he together on social media, Rich.
So oh, yes.
Some interaction with him. If you have had the good fortune to meet Joe, then, you know, you're a friend of his and he's a friend of yours. I think somebody in the last couple of weeks has sort of, you know, got it right when they labeled him the Will Rogers of baseball broadcasters. you don't find anybody with a bad word to say about him, and he just loves the game and loves being around it. I think it's going to be an adjustment for him not doing that on a daily basis. I know he's cut back in recent years, but, you know, only around for the occasional fill-in or ceremony or special event, but certainly, after all his time there, he's earned a happy retirement to spend with his family and grandchildren.
Sean McAdam, MassLive.com. Sean, appreciate you coming on with us throughout the season, keeping us up to date on what's happening, the great work you do at MassLive.com, and we look forward to catching up through the offseason as we see this team getting remade for next year.
Sounds good, Rich. Look forward to it.
All right. Thank you, Sean. Be well.